Two flashpoint social issues were before the Supreme Court today: the constitutionality of school vouchers and the death penalty for retarded criminals. Both are issues that have been before the court before, and both are issues on which the court may change its approach. NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
The Supreme Court Plaza was crowded with voucher parents and voucher opponents today as the High Court took up what has been billed as the test case on school vouchers. The case comes from Cleveland, a school system in such disastrous shape in 1995 that the state legislature decided to provide vouchers for parents who wanted to send their children to private schools. The program provided up to $2,250 to parents for private school tuition and more money directly for charter schools in the city and for suburban schools willing to take on inner-city students. In the end, though, no suburban school accepted students, and 99% of the private school slots available for vouchers throughout the city were at religious schools. Two lower courts concluded that the private school choice for parents was thus so skewed towards religion that the program amounted to an unconstitutional subsidy of religious education. In the stayed Supreme Court chamber today, voucher opponent Robert Channon got close to a shouting match with some of the justices in the course of his argument, and Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, expected to be a critical vote in the case, seemed to flounder amid a sea of information and misinformation about the Cleveland program. Channon argued that the Cleveland School Choice Program does not, in fact, give parents a genuine choice, since if they want to opt out of the public schools, the only real choice they have is parochial schools. Justice Scalia: here we have a failed inner-city school system. Now, it so happens that the only up-and-running alternatives are religious schools. The state allows suburban schools to take these kids, too, but the suburbs say, heck no, we don't want these kids. So how do we get from here to there? Answer: I don't believe a crisis in the Cleveland school justifies ignoring the Constitution. The state of Ohio, instead of allowing private school vouchers, could have provided more money, smaller classes, a better curriculum in the public schools. Justice Kennedy: that's clearly an option, but doesn't the state have the right to other options as well? Lawyer Channon, his voice rising: we have not said much about vouchers as a solution because that's a policy question, but over and over, the evidence shows they are a lousy option. Although the Cleveland case has been billed as the ultimate test of vouchers and whether they violate the wall of separation between church and state, Justice O'Connor, believed to be the critical vote in this case, seemed focused today on a narrower issue. Repeatedly, she asked lawyer Channon why the court should look at private school options in a vacuum. Don't you have to look at other choices available to parents, she asked? Magnet schools? Charter schools? Answer: those other choices are not voucher options. They're part of the public school system. O'Connor: but didn't some of the private schools become charter schools because the state gave them more money that way? If anything, she said, the system is skewed against religious schools. Answer: community or charter schools are not private schools. They're part of the public school system. Justice Scalia: they have entrance exams, don't they? That doesn't sound like a public school to me. Answer: magnet schools do that too, and they're also public schools. Oddly, it was left to the lawyer for the other side, Ohio Assistant Attorney General Judith French, to straighten out the record on community or charter schools. They are part of the public system, she told the justices. They must accommodate all comers. And if there are more applicants than spaces, they're picked by lottery. And no, she told Justice O'Connor, they do not charge tuition. Regardless, French said, they, along with private school vouchers, are among the many choices available to parents under the Cleveland program. And in order to be constitutional, that program must only be neutral in the way it is applied so as not to favor religion. Outside on the courthouse steps, French told reporters why the Cleveland case has caused such a stir.
It's important for other communities around the country. You know, this is not going to answer those policy questions about whether vouchers should be implemented. It's really only going to answer one question, and that one question is whether they can be implemented consistent with the Constitution.
Following the voucher argument, the justices moved right on to their second case of the day, a reconsideration of whether executing retarded criminals is unconstitutionally cruel and unusual punishment. 13 years ago, the court upheld the death penalty for the retarded by a slim 5-4 vote. At that time, the court, in an opinion by Justice O'Connor, said there was no national consensus on the issue since so few states had voiced any opinion in their state laws. But in 1989, there were only two states that barred executing retarded murderers, and now there are 18. When combined with the states that do not have any death penalty at all, that means that more than half the states do not execute retarded criminals. The specific case before the court today involved a grisly murder and a Virginia man named Daryl Atkins who was sentenced to death despite evidence he's retarded. Representing him, lawyer James Ellis contended that the nation has now reached a consensus that it is immoral to execute retarded killers. Justice Scalia, the states that have enacted these laws have not banned execution for those already on death row. Doesn't that suggest to you they don't think it's unconstitutional? Answer, in the bulk of these states, there is no one who's retarded on death row, so it wasn't an issue. Justice Scalia, we have to be very careful here because there's no going back if we say this is unconstitutional. If it turns out that there's a claim of retardation in almost every case and that there are expert witnesses willing to easily say someone is retarded, there's no way to go back because no legislation can override a constitutional finding. Answer, your assumptions have not been borne out in the states that banned executing the retarded long ago. Justice Stevens, what's wrong with executing the retarded? Justice Scalia, they had to know what they were doing was wrong or they wouldn't have been competent to stand trial. Answer, a person may have criminal intent, may know right from wrong, but because of retardation, he has less than a full understanding of what he's doing and the consequences. Just as we don't want to execute those under the age of 16, we don't want the death penalty used for the retarded. Countering that argument was Virginia Assistant Attorney General Pamela Rumps, who contended that it should be up to the jury to determine how culpable a convicted murderer is. Justice Souter, so why don't we say that about children? Answer, we do when they are 16. Question, well, how about 5? If a 5-year-old knows right from wrong, should we execute him? Answer, if we're looking at someone who acted with premeditation and understood right from wrong, then his culpability is no less than yours or mine. Attorney Rumps contended that there's no national consensus against the death penalty in cases involving the retarded. 20 states have not adopted such laws, she noted. Justice Breyer, but in only 2 of those states have there been such executions. Justice Kennedy, one of the great facts of life is legislative inertia. If there's nobody retarded on death row in a state, the legislature doesn't pass a law. No matter, replied Rumps, even in states that have banned capital punishment for the retarded, that conclusion is not enduring. If Osama bin Laden were captured, brought here, and found to be retarded, public opinion would change, she said. These laws are nothing but a pendulum swing. Justice Stevens, Riley, how can it be a pendulum swing if it only goes one way? Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.